broadcasting from the heartland of America.
In the Hoosier Media Network studios.
The next generation in conservative talk radio. This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Hey, darn right it is. What's up? Welcome into it. It is hour number two of your weekend edition here on the Voice of Reason. So great to have you along for the ride. Radio, TV, live streaming, podcasting, making things happen, trying to be your millennial general, trying to be your patriot on the prairie. We are your political therapist each and every weekend, and it's so wonderful to have you. You can find our information on our website, HoosierReason.com, HOOSERReason.com. You can also find all of our social media at Hoosier Reason. All the links are on the website, too, but the handle's all the same. You can also download our podcast, which is killing it. We just broke some more records this last month, so thank you for that. You can find it. Just find The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier on any of your favorite podcasting sites. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we have ALEC, Jonathan Williams with the American Legislative Exchange Council, also known as ALEC, will be joining us. They've come out with their latest rich state, poor state reports on how the economy is doing in individual states. Now, that includes how, you know, tax rates are and government spending is and all that jazz. Now that we're wrapping up the legislative sessions for the most part across the nation at the statewide level, how is the level economically on each state? So we'll have some fun with that conversation coming up at the bottom of this hour. Speaking of the podcast, by the way, I got some really interesting news because there's some cool stuff going on with the show. So, yeah. You're the first ones to hear it. I have not made this announcement anywhere else, but I got an email a couple of days ago from another media outlet that will be broadcasting or at least playing a clip of the show potentially. Now, I want to preface this by saying, how many people remember the individual that was a congressman for a short amount of time, was voted out last year, kind of booted out because of lying on the campaign trail about his qualifications? The congressman, former congressman now, from the state of New York, George Santos. Anybody remember that guy? Yeah, the guy, then all the stuff came out, how he was a drag queen, which I don't really care if he's doing that on his personal time, whatever, but he was a drag queen and that he lied about his entire resume and that he just kind of, he fooled a lot of people in getting into office by talking about all these credentials that he didn't ever have. Well, for those that have listened to my program for a long time, you'll know that we interviewed him multiple times during the campaign. And he obviously fooled us as well because he talked about all the great stuff that he's done and all the stuff he's been involved in and everything that he worked on. And in fact, I'm based out of Wichita, Kansas here at our flagship at the Hoosier Media Network Studios. My weekday show, I broadcast out of the radio station that I work at throughout the week, which is KQAM, the Big Talker in Wichita. And I had him in the studio back in 2021, before the big midterms of 2022, during the election season. He was in Wichita for some, if I remember correctly, he was in Wichita for like an energy conference because he had talked about his experience in the energy industry. Then we found out it's not necessarily true and that he didn't have actually as much experience as what he said he did to get elected by having all this grand knowledge and experience and all the jobs that he had and everything that he did. So we found out that that was a complete farce. But he was in town for an energy conference, or at least that's what he said when he was in town. And we had him in studio. So nonetheless, fast forward to today. A couple of days ago, I got an email from the Dr. Phil show. Yeah. Yeah, Dr. Phil.
Say what?
I know. So Dr. Phil apparently has a new program. He's ended his actual Dr. Phil show where he talks about, you know, kids and he talks about the family and he talks about his psychology stuff. And it's more about current events and societal issues and a little bit of politics. I got an email from his team that said that they're interviewing George Santos for one of their upcoming episodes of the show. And they asked if they could play a clip of the interview that we had done with George Santos from a couple of years ago and actually play that on the episode. I don't know if they're actually going to for their final cut. I don't know if it's actually going to air officially, and I don't know what clip they're actually going to use, but they wanted to play a clip of the interview. And I responded back and said, absolutely, you're more than welcome to. Everything that I do on this show is obviously public domain for you to use however you want to promote, from the individual, the guest that was on at that time to promote it, or for someone to listen to or to play a clip of and respond either in a positive or a hateful manner. I don't really care because I'm proud and I stand behind everything that I've said on this show. I know it's talk radio and it's off the cuff and it's a whim half the time, but nonetheless, I am going to stand by what I say on this program. I've never said anything hateful. I've never said anything that's a lie. I've never said anything of quote unquote misinformation.
You are fake news.
I haven't done any of that. So you can listen back as many years as on my podcast platforms, and you can listen to all of these episodes, and you can see how consistent we've been on the show. So I emailed him back and I said, sure, use it. Please do. I mean, obviously, my broadcast will be on some type of public platform. Chad, what do you think about this? Pretty cool, huh? So they responded back and they said, awesome. I did, although, in my email say, yes, you can use that. You can use the other interviews that we had done with George Santos on the episode. I said, however, obviously, congratulations on the new show. When can I get Dr. Phil on this program? And they emailed back and put me in with his booking agent. So we'll see if we can get Dr. Phil on this program here in the next few weeks, because that would be really cool. So more information to come, but just to give you a heads up, I have not announced this anywhere else yet, and kind of neat that we may have Dr. Phil on the program, and that Dr. Phil, apparently his new show called Dr. Phil Primetime, which is more of societal, political, and societal issues, that they'll be playing potentially a clip of this show on there while they interview George Santos. So kind of some interesting stuff. I'm really honored, really neat, and we'll see if that actually ends up airing or not. All right, let's get into some other stuff of what's trending right now, shall we?
What's going on in this world of mine? There's a whole lot of killing in this world of mine. Somebody's got to help this world of mine.
All right, a couple of things going on, because obviously Washington, D.C. right now in the middle of their votes for their foreign policy bills that they want to wrap up by this weekend. The vote's going on really as we speak. We'll have some information as that goes on. But before we do that, real quick, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on this issue. However, we did get some new information from the Trump trials, as Donald Trump made a statement on Thursday night, Friday morning, I believe, after some more of the court cases, more individuals being chosen on the jury, which they started off, from what I heard, they started off with near 100 individuals as potential candidates for the jury, and close to 40 or 50 of them right out of the gate, boom, they had to leave because they could not be impartial. Even ones that were selected then came back and said, yeah, we can't be impartial in this court case. Which, as we've said, is going to be impossible because everybody has an opinion on Donald Trump. Everybody. Either you love the guy and he did no wrong, or they hate the guy and he's the worst person on the face of the earth. Now, The View, thank God they're not chosen for the trial here and for the jury, because The View is like, oh, even though I hate the guy, I can totally be impartial. Which, by that, is just an oxymoron by itself. But Donald Trump coming out with guns blazing during some of these hearings because he's not allowed to go see his son's graduation. He has to be there every single day. They literally, we've sunk to the level of having sleep experts on mainstream media outlets and platforms to talk about why he's dozing off during this, because he's just so stressed about it, even though it's just a ridiculously boring day where he just has to sit there and not allowed to leave. But firing back on some of this over the past few days.
The whole world is watching this hoax. You got a DA that's out of control. You have a judge that's highly conflicted. The whole thing is a mess. And you have the leading candidate and leading crooked Joe Biden by a lot. He's the one that should be in trial. He's a crook. You got a crooked president. He should be in trial with all the stuff he's done and his family. He should be in trial, but he's the one in charge. His top people are here working with the DA's office to make sure everything goes right. But it shouldn't go right because they have no case, and that's what this is all about.
He's going to continue to fire back, and the judge not very happy about that. The progressives obviously not very happy about some of those statements, but he doesn't care, man. And I will say, and even the Democrats are now admitting, mainstream media, there was a headline on Drudge just a day or so ago that had made the comment that a CNN analysis even admitted that if Donald Trump does get arrested for whatever reason and thrown in jail, maybe because he misses a day of the court case, or because his, you know, he's not allowed to speak about certain things and he speaks about it, or because he attacks or, sorry, bullies or intimidates one of the jurors, which was already acclaimed by some of the progressive wokes of, he's looking at me wrong. And with those types of threats, then, of course, that's just going to give an excuse for Donald Trump to get in trouble by the judge, who's just itching to throw him behind bars. And the CNN analyst made the comment that if Donald Trump goes in jail, there would be civil unrest. And I have to admit that that's probably true. Now, for conservatives, I warn you over and over and over again that we have to hold ourselves to a higher standard, and that we cannot be emotional and do emotional reactions to some of this ridiculousness, because they're wanting to. It's like Iran that's literally taunting Israel, saying, come on, come at us. Go ahead and shoot stuff at us, which Israel, by the way, did. They did approve a short-term like three missiles that were shot over there in a limited response for all the drones and the missiles that were sent over that way. So, but they're taunting, literally wanting to create a scene. That's what Iran's doing. And the Democrats are literally trying to do that. They want civil unrest going into an election year. So I warn you not to do that. And while they do whatever at Donald Trump, we have to fight the root cause. We cannot be out in the streets and cause the violence, because that's going to build up their arson into election year to show that they validate what Donald, what Joe Biden said in January when he started off the election, saying that Donald Trump's an authoritarian and Donald Trump's a fascist and Donald Trump's a Nazi and the MAGA movement and the conservative movement is the most hateful organization in American history, and they're the most politically engaged in American history, and they're the most they're the ones clinging to their guns and Bibles, and they are the domestic terrorists. That's what they want, and they're itching to throw Donald Trump behind bars for any reasons they can to see what that reaction is going to be. We have to beat this at the root cause, and the root cause is a deeply corrupt, deeply infested court system and activist judges and liberals in our court system that we have to get rid of. It's what we have to do. There's not going to be any other going out and, you know, trying to act like what Democrats do with Antifa and Chad and Chaz or Chop or whatever the hell that was up in Seattle, which we're broadcasting in right now. So you're welcome, you idiots up there. Not everybody else that actually listens to this program, but the ones that actually think that they were doing something by starting a new society that lasted for a month that led to rapes and drugs and murders and everything of the sort. They're not the brightest out there. They're not the brightest crayons in the box, if you know what I mean. But we cannot do that, because that would just build up their arson into an election year to prove that the MAGA movement is a radical, extreme, violent organization and the domestic terrorists that gives them the arson to silence us, that gives them the ability to actually censor us, that gives them the ability to shadow ban us, that gives them the ability to monitor us and watch us. We cannot do that. So we need to be very cautious on what's happening there. And that's, I mean, that's my PSA for the day. There you go. But they're looking for it, and this is going to be absolute madness. Now, that being said, Donald Trump's still in court, and it's not going to end anytime soon. Apparently, they want it to be done by Memorial Day, Memorial Weekend. We'll see if that's the case or not. But having a hard time finding jurors, and I just warn you, be cautious and step away from this issue for a moment. As Donald Trump said, this is a sham case like it has been for every other case out there, and we don't need to pay attention to this garbage. What we do need to pay attention to is them trying to push the buttons and egg us on over and over. And I'm afraid that at some point, someone will actually respond in kind because they finally pushed too far. But we have to be the adults here. Instead of the children throwing the temper tantrum like the Democrats do over and over, throwing their temper tantrum and getting everything that they want, we have to be the adults in the situation, not allow the taunting to respond in kind to us, and actually handle this like adults and say, you know what? It's time for you guys to be voted the hell out of office. We're going to clean up this corruption in the system, and we're going to fight back. Not physically fight back, but politically fight back. And start changing the system as it needs to be. Hitting the reset button in society, which is why they're so desperate for Donald Trump not to be on the ballot or get into the White House, because you know that's what's going to happen when he ends up getting into office as well. All right, that's enough of that. When we come back, we have the votes going on in D.C. We'll talk about what these bills are, and there's a new coalition of conservatives on the House floor. Did they do it intentionally, or was it a joke on what they named themselves to try and fight back against some of the establishment Republicans that are trying to push the narrative with Democrats on some of these foreign policy bills? Lots of that coming up. Stay right here.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. It's your Patriot on the Prairie. This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Hey, darn right it is. Your political therapist, your patriot on the prairie, your conservative millennial general, whatever you want to call us. So great to have you with us here on another weekend edition here of The Voice of Reason. So great to have you along for the ride. All right, that's enough of the Donald Trump court thing. It drives me nuts. I'm so sick of talking about it, hearing about it. I don't care. It's a sham one, and I just don't want to pay any attention to it, because we have some major issues going on, like what's going on in Washington, D.C. right now with the ongoing votes. There's a hit piece out of MSN that I found kind of interesting that talked about the new coalition of conservatives that are pushing back against the establishment. Now, obviously, there's a major, and I give them kudos. Keep on going, because we need this. The Marjorie Taylor Greens, the Chip Roys, the Jim Jordans, the conservatives that are fighting for what needs to be fought for. And even if it hurts them a little bit, which it kind of is, let's be honest, with the pushing to oust Mike Johnson and some of the other stuff they're trying to do. It's a necessity for the Republicans and a necessary thing that needs to be done. Because we have to hold the Republican Party accountable. And if we don't, remember, if we don't scrap and scrape and tear and claw and fight and gnarl and gnash our way, then we don't get anything. The Democrats get 90% of what they want all the time. And obviously they're going to get another Ukrainian funding bill and some foreign policy support on this. And if conservatives want any say at all, we have to push and tug and tail and do everything that we have to just to get a sliver of what we want. And it seems to be the ongoing thing. So there's a new coalition of House conservatives that MSN's joking about called the Floor Action Response Team. Now, if you spell that out, that would be F-A-R-T. That would be the Fart Coalition. Hold on. I don't know if that was done intentional as kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing or if that was just a oversight from the conservatives because whatever. But the mainstream media loving this and joking about it as the quote-unquote far-right House Freedom Caucus. I love, again, the term out, the far-right House Coalition. House Freedom Caucus has formed a crack team of conservative lawmakers to monitor the House floor lest Speaker Mike Johnson and other Republicans try to limit their power. There was a behind-the-scenes closed-door meeting between Mike Johnson and Marjorie Taylor Greene leading up to the votes that are happening right now in Washington on these foreign policy bills. Because obviously, Marjorie Taylor Greene does not want to fund Ukraine. She thinks we're done with that. We're not focusing on immigration. And we're not focusing on the priorities that we need to. And she's expressed that concern to Mike Johnson. And Mike Johnson, apparently, now this is according to the media from what they've heard with the behind-the-scenes closed doors from Marjorie Taylor Greene and Mike Johnson, that Mike Johnson offered her a spot on his personal committee of advisory board for his speakership in order to get her on board with some of this stuff. And she turned it down, which good for her. Because being bought off, which really shows a little bit of the character for Mike Johnson as well, allegedly, if this actually happened, it shows that he really wants this to happen and is trying to work with her and tried to buy her off in some degree, and she turned it down. So the whole self-serving thing's a little bit ridiculous. We have been led to this position, and that we're starting to see with all these people dropping out of Congress, with people not wanting to run for re-election, or people that have just completely dropped out, like the latest one with Mike Gallagher out of Wisconsin, that's just done, boom, that led us to now our one vote majority in the House, that there were so many people that were dedicated, it sounds like, to the establishment, or dedicated, it sounds like, to Kevin McCarthy personally. And when he was ousted, which wasn't supposed to happen, he agreed on those terms with Matt Gaetz about that one vote to oust him. He didn't think that would happen, so he's like, sure, whatever, okay. And then he was surprised when it did happen. And he's upset. That's why he left at the end of the year. He didn't fulfill his term, which I don't really care. See you later, you know, Kevin McCarthy. I don't really care about you. But that does really say about your character for not even fulfilling your duty as a member of the House of Representatives going into an election year especially and leaving that vacant and limiting the amount of seats that we actually have. That's your fault. But it has hindered what Mike Johnson has been able to do at this point, making him walk a finer line and have to work harder to unite the entire caucus and the entire House to actually get something done. So Kevin McCarthy, the lingering, rippling waves and the unintended consequences of him leaving and all his dedicated cronies that have been walking out after him have caused some issues.
Is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. When Reason meets radio, this is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Welcome back into the program. So great to have you along for the ride. As always, really happy to have this guy on the program. As you know, we like to talk about a lot of economics on the show and how Bidenomics has done oh so well in the country. We're doing great with taxes and inflation and how much money the government's spending and how much we get to pay out of pocket for our food and all of our goodies each and every day. How are we doing as we get closer to tax season and the state of the economy? Happy to have on the program. He's with ALEC, one of my favorite organizations, the American Legislative Exchange Council, with the 17th edition of their Rich States, Poor States report coming out. Mr. Jonathan Williams. John, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, Andy. Great to be back with you. And as always, greetings from this land of make-believe out in Washington, D.C.
Washington, D.C. I'm assuming there's an odor out there at some point with the toxins that float around from all the hot air that comes out of politicians' mouths, isn't there?
Well, I think so. You got to watch the drinking water, what you're going to put in your mouth up here. And it's, you know, they call it Potomac fever. You got to watch it. You don't catch that.
It is unbelievable.
They come with big government policies and high taxes when you do.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, kudos to you for living in that region, because that's a whole other beast that you get to see each and every day. It is wild to me, John, that we have the Biden administration, the leader of the free world, that's out campaigning on his investing in America and how great all the money is that he spent in the country and how great it is with how the economy is going after 3 years of him in the White House, when we see that overall inflation is almost up 20%. Food itself is anywhere between 3 to 4 times higher over the past 3 years compared to what it was prior to Joe Biden. I don't know how they can go into an election year and campaign about how great the economy is going right now.
Well, right. I mean, you know, the market is teetering in the last several of days here, too, way down today with the Dow Jones 500 points or so last I saw. But I mean, you saw those very concerning inflation numbers ticking back up again that just came out yesterday, I guess it was, which I think drove a lot of that market sell-off today. You know, we are far from out of the woods when it comes to getting out from under this inflation problem. You know, and this is a government-driven big spending problem that has driven this inflation from the start. And so, you know, while the Federal Reserve has claimed, you know, victory, or at least partial victory, of course, after they told us there was no inflation, they tried to gaslight us on that for far too long. Then they've been trying to say, well, we've got it under control. And well, guess what? It's not rocket surgery here, as my co-author Art Laffer likes to say. I mean, this is basic economic 21. When you spend more and print more money, don't expect for inflation to go away overnight. And in fact, it may get worse. I think there's still a lot of problems there. There's a lot of uncertainty over what's going to happen, obviously, this fall with the federal elections and for president and for the control of Congress being up for grabs in both chambers. And let's not forget, I mean, one of the biggest things that's up for grabs this fall is the signature item of the Trump years on the economic side, which is the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, the Trump tax cuts, that if nothing is done in this Congress, which in gridlock in Washington is pretty safe to say it's probably not going to get done at least this year, nothing is done by the end of next year, Andy. 23 provisions for tax cuts for individuals go away at the end of 2025. And wow. So that is looming in the distance here. $1.5 trillion of that was a tax cut last 2017 that could go away going forward. So that's a big, big thing that's hanging over the economy. And that's why I'm not also optimistic we're going to have an easy ride of it when it comes to the economy this year.
That is a cause for concern. And the weird part is, John, is that normally during election year, they try to just make it as cushy as possible to say how everything's going great, how everything's coasting along. And they usually run a positive campaign to look at what we've done. I don't see that happening this year right now. We have gas prices that are already on the rise early on for the springtime, even before the heavy summer travel that many people want to do. Like you said, if tax cuts are actually going to be ending, we see a tax increase in some aspects across the nation. That's going to be even more of a brunt and pressure on the American people. I don't know how you can run as the incumbent, running as a candidate, saying that things are going to go well.
Well, it's a very difficult position that they're in. You have 2/3 of Americans in recent polling that say their taxes are already too high and threatened by huge new tax increases. And then you turn to the Federal Reserve, whose job is potentially even more difficult, where you have Jerome Powell, their chair of the Fed, being pulled in a couple of different very tough directions here. You have the pressure, I'm sure, from the Biden administration wanting to have easy money in an election year to try to juice the markets and get their way through November without causing too much political damage. But with these inflation numbers remaining stubbornly high, this really boxed the Federal Reserve in. They wanted to cut rates, and they keep delaying that. And certainly the more you see these inflation numbers coming in hot, that's going to further delay to the inevitable that rate cuts may not happen early in the year or at all this year, because you cannot add fuel to the inflation fire right now by cutting rates, clearly, if the inflation is still on the way upwards.
Well, and what's the definition of insanity? I mean, over the past, 3 years under Biden, that we've seen the Treasury say we're going to do another interest rate hike. It's gone up and up, 11 or 12 or 13 different times. And we still see anywhere between a 3.5% and 4.5% inflation rate each month, which they don't want to see. I mean, at what point do we realize maybe we should stop just raising interest rates to price people out of the market and just stop spending money to allow things to balance themselves out and cool off a little bit? But I know Washington, D.C. doesn't like to think about that way.
That's too much common sense right there, Andy. I mean, that's way too much common sense for Washington, D.C., because you could, with a magic wand and a few leaders in positions of influence here in Washington, turn this trajectory around. And, you know, first step you got to do when you're in a hole is stop digging it deeper. We got to cut off the spigots of this overspending disease that's really enveloped Washington. It's a bipartisan problem. Let's be frank about it. We've had a lot of big spending Republicans that haven't been able to say no to spending desires. But obviously, this most recent tranche has got us right on the edge now. $35 trillion of national debt has been driven by the progressives who run Congress.
Yeah, it is unfortunate. We're talking with Jonathan Williams with ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. Let's bring it down to the statewide levels across the nation. I know you guys have your rich states, poor states, and I want to talk about that in just a moment. Living in Kansas, where I'm based out of with my flagship station, we just, as we about ready to end our legislative session, just passed a tax cut, not as deep as what we would have liked as conservative Republicans, but still at least we got some type of tax cut that it sounds like our governor, our Democrat governor, may actually vote for instead of vetoing like she did before. I know that Oklahoma has been able to actually get rid of their sales tax on food. Other states have been working on this in their sessions this year. But from your guys' stance and what you've seen around the nation, what states are doing well, do you think, this year in actually working on trying to cut taxes, at least at a statewide level?
Well, you know, a lot of what we've talked about so far, Andy, has been the doom and gloom and just the real problems that we have with the federal and national picture. I think the story wouldn't be more different when you look at the state level, where there's all kinds of leadership and optimism of states really living within their means and really cutting taxes and prioritizing taxpayers. In fact, over the last three state legislative sessions across the country, we've seen 26 different states cut taxes. Mostly income taxes. As I know, President Ty Masterson, who's our ALEC board chairman this year, has led a valiant effort to try to make Kansas more competitive through tax reductions and maybe even getting to a flat tax at some point. You know, and I think in some cases with these compromises, maybe not as bold as other states have done or we as fiscal conservatives would like if we had our druthers, but, you know, there's certainly a liberal Democrat sitting in the office in Topeka right now looking to veto a lot of things. And so sometimes you have to take the half a loaf or fraction of a loaf and keep coming back for additional tax cuts and tax reform in future years and setting yourself up on that path to go to a flat tax or, you know, maybe even go where Texas and Florida and Tennessee, some of the fastest growing states in America that rank very well in rich states, poor states, for instance, you know, go without a personal income tax altogether. I tend to think that's really the approach of the best way to get to real economic growth. And of course, in migration, because I mean, what's the benefit of doing this? This isn't just an academic exercise for states to say, we just cut our marginal rate from X to Y. This is because what it means is a better standard of living for their citizens, for businesses, and to keep population growing. One of the great phenomenons of rich states, poor states now for 17 years has been how much Americans vote with their feet away from high tax states and towards states that have lower taxes or avoid income taxes altogether and provide that kind of economic opportunity for all citizens.
Yeah. Have you seen in your guys' study, have you seen a difference on which one is more beneficial and better for the economy between a flat tax, just having a single payer rate tax plan and a flat tax for everybody, or compared to like a fair tax, like you said, and getting rid of income tax altogether and solely focusing on sales tax? Which one of those do you think has been beneficial for states?
Well, they're both beneficial. I think, you know, it comes down to how much discipline the states have on keeping spending levels in check, because one of the keys to the states that go without income taxes is they spend about 50% less per person than the states with income taxes. So it's not necessarily that they rearrange the deck chairs on different types of taxes and have sky-high taxes on sales or on property. It's that they're more frugal with their government spending. I think that's the key to success, no matter what type of tax reform and flat or fair that you're looking at. But I think, you know, we've seen great examples. Utah's number one in our ranking as a flat tax state that's done pension reform and kept property taxes under control. Just so many good things that Utah's done. But I'm a huge fan that the right flat tax rate is zero and not to have that penalty on work and savings and investment. And plus, once you get that income tax ripped out of the code, then you don't have all these compliance issues that all of us are treading over right now as we're looking to file our own taxes. And you just have to worry about the federal income tax. You don't have to worry about all that compliance, all the sales tax or income tax administration in this case, and all those kind of audits that a state has to do to actually administer an income tax. So I think that's the best model, Andy.
Yeah, I agree. Hold that thought. We got to take a break here real quick. And we're talking with the American Legislative Exchange Council with the Rich States, Poor States, the latest report that we've seen coming out with, you know, surprise, surprise, people moving away from high tax states and states that can't get their budgets under control. And of course, the swarming into states that we have actually, you know, stable economies, or at least more stable spending and tax rates and incentives for businesses to grow and people to flourish. What a wild concept. We'll do some more of this when we come back here. Right around the corner, American Legislative Exchange Council. By the way, I'm a big fan of the organization as they continue to work with different state legislators and legislative bodies around the country on ways to implement some of this stuff, which is really neat. We'll do some more of that when we come back here as we get ready to wrap up the weekend edition of Your Voice of Reason. Lots more to get to. Stay here.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. America's safe space for common sense. This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Reason, common sense, rationale, that's just what we do here on the show each and every weekend, which, by the way, you can always find us on our social media at Hoosier Reason. Find our website, HoosierReason.com, HOOSERReason.com. You can find the times on when we're actually live on the air. You can find a local affiliate radio stations near you, which more coming on soon as well. You can find all of our great partners that we partner with here on the show and so much more. Plus, if you want to, which we are getting down to the next couple of weeks here, sign up to become a Hoosierholic. Go to HoosierReason.com and then you'll see a pop-up right out of the gate that says, do you want to be a Hoosierholic? You say yes. You type in your email. Totally simple. We don't spam you. We don't do a whole lot of garbage. We just send you a once a month email with our blog and our content and the latest with the show and stuff with the podcast and stuff with the network that we work with and Hoosier Media Network and everything else. So it's really cool. Sign up, HoosierReason.com, HOOSERReason.com, and go and check that out. I would like to preface that when we see these rich states, poor states, and we see people moving from one state to another, that I'd like to remind you, if you are one of those, and I know who you are, specifically coming out of New York, coming out of California, coming out of these areas, that if you move out of the state that you've destroyed with your progressive policies on high taxes and high regulation, can I remind you to not do that where you're moving to, please? Don't bring your California policies to Kansas, where I'm from, or Nebraska, or Oklahoma, or Texas, or Wyoming, or to Colorado, or any of those, which is a little bit ridiculous. We're hanging out with John Williams. He's with the American Legislative Exchange Council talking about the latest rich state, poor state report across the nation. And John, we just got about a minute or so left here. Let's talk about the bigger states like California and New York, obviously going in the opposite direction of what actually works. But at what point will these states be unsustainable with their budgets and with their high taxes? California, you already have to make over like $200,000 just to even buy a home in the state. New York has so much crime and such high interest rates, and people are just it's so inexpensive or so expensive that people can't afford to live there, that the latest poll shows that near 50% of New York residents would want to move out of the city within the next 5 to 10 years. When do you think these cities and these states are finally going to say enough is enough? We can't sustain this and have to be forced to change their tone.
Well, great question. I think it's coming. I mean, New York is down 2 million people on net over the last 10 years to the other 49 states of people voting with their feet away from New York. Some of these smaller towns in upstate New York are hemorrhaging jobs and individuals. Even you've seen sectors of the financial community move to South Florida with venture capital and tons of different financial interests there. And if New York were ever to lose other major financial players, that would be the death knell, obviously, of New York. So I think the time's coming. I think the real question, Andy, is are they able to come back to a federal government and say, all right, we now in California's case, they have a $70 billion budget deficit. Will the federal government come in and continue to bail out these states that can't govern themselves? And I think that's going to be the answer to our question. If we allow states to rise and fall on their own merits, that big government vision for how you govern a state can't sustain itself over the long term.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, but at least you guys have the numbers, and eventually, I know that you can lead the horse to the trough, but sometimes they just need to figure it out on their own. But one of these days, these states and these places will recognize where the economic growth is happening, and they can't squeeze people just by raising higher taxes in order to fund their insanity. If you want to look at the entire report, you can go to the website at richstatespoorstates.org. Again, richstatespoorstates.org. It is Jonathan Williams with ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. John, keep up the fight, my friend. I love this information. We got to get you back on and do it again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Andy.
Good stuff indeed. You can find their website with ALEC. You can also find their Rich State, Poor State report as well. John Williams with the American Legislative Exchange Council. We appreciate your time very much, my friend. There we are. That does it for the day. As we go through and we look at these states and we go further into election season, notice how some Democrats, and this is my word as we go off for the end of the program for today, notice how the change in tone, the change in policies may happen with certain progressive Democrats and your elected officials, fill in the blank, wherever you may be, because they like to tend to go a little bit more moderate. They like to pretend like they're actually cutting taxes. They actually care about government spending. They actually care about the state of the financial situation in this nation, which is never usually the case until it's right around election season. So just keep that in mind as we go into election year as well. And these reports like this rich state, poor state, and some of the government spending and tax states and so on and so forth, extremely important, because we can hold their feet to the fire. Because you, as the local catalyst, you as the local activist, you make that difference. Nobody else is going to. No political party, no organization. You're going to do it, and you do it with the help of these groups that actually give you this information. ALEC is a great one. Our partners with American Prosperity is a great one, and so many others that give you the tools to be able to fight this stuff on the home front. That does it for us today. Back at it next weekend. It's always fun, man. It flies by way too fast. We always have a blast on this program. Until then, be your own voice of reason. Be that catalyst for change. It's time for you to speak up, speak out, speak loud, speak proud, speak the truth, and always speak some reason. This is The Voice of Reason. I'm Andy Hoosier. Everybody have a great weekend. Bye.